And we spent some time on faith, and tonight we're going to look at effort. But they shouldn't be looked at as separate, discrete qualities, but rather a flow or movement across the boundaries of each of these particular qualities. And they're really extraordinary qualities. And if you think of them, I think I used the analogy of a car or some such thing, where the four tires are faith, if I can get them right now, faith, effort, mindfulness, and concentration. In the faith, effort, concentration, never mind, wisdom, and the driver is mindfulness. Thank you, whoever said that. For the longest time, I couldn't remember the Eightfold Path. I'd get six of them. So it's a whole vehicle that we're moving. And so what I want to talk about tonight is faith-based effort, how faith moves into effort, and that effort changes its nature depending upon the quality of faith that we have at any particular time. And as I mentioned in the previous weeks, there are various stages of faith. There's bright faith, in which the possibilities of something and the potential of something is seen, and we have that exciting quality. And that exciting quality is an energetic quality, but the energy has to be channeled, and effort is the channeling of energy. And as long as it just stays kind of enthusiastic, it can be kind of lost in its meaning and its purpose. And then bright faith moves into verified faith, which is where the practice begins to reveal its truths personally, directly to the person who is practicing, rather than as a secondary learning from a book or from a teacher. And then verified faith then moves into abiding faith, which is the living within presence itself and living with that quality of the unknown. And each of those stages of faith have an accompanying component of effort that's associated with them. And so tonight I want to walk through the different stages of faith and look at the effort that comes in relationship to that quality of understanding that the faith brings, and how it is that we hold that sense of effort and utilize the energy from it. And I might say that these stages and these appearances of progression of faith, you'll find many times you're back to step one. And then sometimes you won't even have any what seems like faith at all. You just wonder where the whole thing is. And then you'll have a very, very strong sense of verified faith, and then perhaps moments of abiding faith. So it's not like you get to one step and you don't regress or move one way or the other, that oftentimes you'll see yourself in each of these steps. So you can't say, this is where I am. But remember that the definition of faith, we kind of left the definition, is the ability to trust. Ability to trust. And I just want to reference the last talk, because I think it's such an important component of our spiritual lives that many of us have not learned how to trust. We haven't learned sufficiently the ability to trust, perhaps based upon our history, a variety of reasons, and we are always reticent to expose ourselves in certain ways, which is the definition of trust, really. And yet the practice, any spiritual practice, at some point requires that from us. So if we stay too self-contained, we stay just that, self-contained. And to move out beyond self-containment is really the expression of what a liberated free mind is. So I challenge all of us together in the willingness to risk. And it's not as if, you know, you're risking something in the future, like, oh, I have to get into a relationship. It's the moment that you're risking. It's the present moment. It's the willingness to abide in the present moment that where faith is actualized. And it's because we constantly resist the whole of the moment. We'll take part of it. I'll take you, but not you, in it, that the lack of trust seems to perpetuate itself. And so really what I'm referring to, trust, is not resisting anything. Not resisting. Just saying yes, okay, non-resistance to the present. So I just wanted to bring people up to speed on our talk so that we can work together on this sense of effort. Because effort, without faith, you can't really understand it. I mean, it's like a shotgun approach. And this practice, believe me, is hard enough. And so we can say that faith is the movement from mistrust to trust, from resistance to non-resistance, from the known to the unknown. I'm really saying the same thing there. And may I say that no one that is interested in spiritual movement is without faith, some aspect of faith. So you all have some. You all have it. You wouldn't be here. And the word faith has a kind of a, there's a sort of a, it's not the safest word for us, because we conjure up feelings of being coerced into something and tied to something, faith-based spirituality. But that's not what we're talking about here. And as we talk about effort, I think you'll understand the difference. So effort of the mind is the attempt to move towards a sincerity which faith is aspiring to. It's to try to align the spirit of the faith with the energies of the body and mind, and to try to channel that in the direction of our faith. And I mean, just looking at what effort means in terms of our practice, when we don't have much direct experience on what the practice brings forth, it seems torturous almost to sit and to have to deal with the thinking mind, and then you hear this voice that says, let go of the thinking and come back to the breath. And at least I was getting some enjoyment out of the thinking, and now I have to come to the dryness of just breathing. I see no reason for that whatsoever. I don't understand why I have to do that or what good it is. And yet, reluctantly, I do it. Now, I'm only going to do that for so long before I expect some payoff, right? I want some verification that coming back to the breath is going to be more beneficial than thinking. And I enjoy thinking. And we defend it wholeheartedly. And we just we start out so I mean, bright faith has given us a sense of the potential or possibility that we may have from reading a sutta or listening to a talk or reading a book. But that enthusiasm wanes quickly if it's not into something we know and think is beneficial. So faith in the beginning, faith from just bright faith, from just seeing or hoping about a possibility, has a lot of strategies associated with it. The strategy that there's got to be some payoff here. So I want something that I know is going to be beneficial. So it's really a movement more into knowing than into not knowing. Do you see that? Well, I can say, okay, now I'm calmer. I'm calmer than I was, so that's worthwhile. I can hold my attention a little more on the breath, and so, okay, so things are picking up here. And I have a little more sensitivity. So my wife likes that, so there's some benefit to that. So we look for the benefits. We look for ways to sort of verify the effort that we're giving in terms of some product. And fair enough. I mean, that's fair enough. We don't know any other way to be. And so our effort needs to be towards the tangible. And yet, at the same time, something is growing in us. I mean, every time we come back to the breath, if we don't constantly in our minds hold ourselves to only what we want from the practice, which can cover up the intangibles of the practice. When we only are focused on the tangible results of something, what it's going to give me, what it's going to do for me, and how it's going to change me, we may miss the intangibles. And underneath all of that, there's something growing. There's something happening there. There's a mystery that is being touched. Anytime we're not locked exclusively in our thinking, anytime that we can actually be on our breath and not think about our breathing, which is another trap, I mean, to feel it. There's the intimation or the sensing of some space that's growing, some wonder, something that isn't fixed and located in such definite I'm not in such a definite relationship to things. And I don't really count that for much, because what's it do for me? It makes me feel kind of fuzzy-headed when I open my eyes. Things don't seem as grounded to me, meaning they're not as heavy. So I dismiss that, and I go back and I look for what the tangibles are again. And it's not that the tangibles don't come; the tangibles do come. Many of you who have practiced can look back and see significant changes in your life over time. But this whole early practice of effort, we're really bringing ourselves along with the effort. We're not so interested in the finer attunement to what spiritual practice is really about, which is opening up beyond this level of self-containment. We're actually looking for beautification of that containment, aren't we? And that's okay. Again, this is not in any way to disparage that particular thing. It's just to show that it's where we all start. It's where we all begin. And if we're honest, many of us find ourselves there again and again throughout our practice, no matter how many years we've been. Sometimes all you want is a quiet mind. You don't care about the mystery. Right? Just get away from things. Sometimes it's just a release. A relief. And so that spiral continues. Now, for practicing from that bright faith is very different than practicing from blind faith. Blind faith is when you practice because you think you should practice. You have a belief that practice would be good for you. Or your spouse told you that they're getting a lot out of it, and why don't you try it too? Which is the worst reason to practice. And so this "I really should do it" kind of mentality is the worst reason to practice. In fact, an effort they call heroic faith, a heroic effort, the effort that comes from within oneself, that inward urgency to practice for one's own reasons rather than from an external source and therefore from a sense of ought to. And that's really the difference between blind faith, which is just based upon belief, and bright faith, which is based upon an inward sense of real potential in oneself. So, bright faith brings forth the effort to really remain in control of ourselves and to see if we can't influence this sense of me with some improvement and some, you know, touch-up paint. And after a while, we have to begin to be truthful and sincere about this sense of self-beautification, this sense of self-improvement that comes from bright faith before bright faith is verified in terms of one's direct experience. And to really look and be honest, yes, this is, I'm trying to self-improve here. Now, spirituality, as we've talked about quite frequently, is not about self-improvement. Self-improvement happens. Self-improvement is a byproduct, but it's not where the focus and intention of our effort needs to be. And very quickly, when you begin to see that self-improvement occurs, the effort can slip away from the main road, the main direction, towards self-improvement. Now, what is the main direction if self-improvement isn't that? The main direction is understanding the self itself. Understanding what the self is. Understanding how this sense of me, I seem to abide always with this sense of me. And so, maybe through lecture or book or whatever, we begin to sense, well, you know, my efforts aren't really in that direction. My effort really is in terms of just making my life comfortable. And again, it's not wrong to do that. It's just limited. It's just limiting. You only can do that, it'll only take you so far. And many people who have practiced in that fashion for a number of years become cynical about what meditation really is. But it's not that meditation has failed. It's that we have failed meditation in the sense that we have directed it according to a pleasure-pain principle rather than in terms of understanding. Understanding. The principle of meditation is governed by understanding, is governed by seeing and insight, knowing, self-knowledge. Not self-beautification. So we have to ask ourselves from time to time, if we see ourselves in that fix, who is it that's putting forth the effort? Who is it that's efforting? Who is that? And to begin to look at the journey that we are on as a journey of self-discovery. That's an important part. Now, as a lay practitioner, which we all are, our life is very rich around that context. Very rich. The problem is, it's also equally as difficult as it is rich. But the potential is there. And that's what we're trying to do through Seattle Insight, is to point the direction out over and over again of how potentially rich our lives are to move into the self-discovery arena. So, that's abiding, that's the effort of abiding faith. The effort of abiding faith. And there are a couple of obvious obstacles to effort at this level. One is that we don't really try fully, with full effort, as long as we don't understand that the problem is within us. If we believe, even slightly, even like 5% or 10% or 50% of us believes that the problem is really outside, then we're not going to have full effort to verify our faith. Our energies are going to be remaining on the external to try to fix the external, to try to get a better job, a better mate, and improve this or that. And it's not until we conclusively understand that the problem is within, that we carry the problem with us, that we can really change over from abiding faith to verified faith. Because why should we? Why should we put forth that effort? If the problem's out there, then I should spend a lot of time trying to adjust that environment. And it's so difficult to learn how to hold the world so that we can see that we are the problem. We don't want to see that way. Because we feel, when we do see that way, that it doesn't verify our faith, it verifies our doubt that we're the cause. We're to blame for all this. And so, of course, we're going to deflect that defensively and shield ourselves from seeing in that way. So it's so difficult to make that turn. And yet, slowly, somehow, through the process of awareness, of being in touch, of looking, begin to understand that it's never out there. And it's always the way we hold things in here. And then there can be an orientation. Okay. Now there's a consolidation and alignment of our effort. Not so that half of it is trying to fix external events and protect an internal sense of blame, but it's all directed now internally. And none of it is directed at the same time, none of it is directed towards internal blame. It's not when the arrows points fully towards oneself that now it's all my fault. It's not that. It's how the mind holds life. It's how it resists life. It's how it tries to protect itself. Inevitably, the second obstacle to effort comes at this time. At this time, when we turn our energies in and really look at how it is and why it is that we resist life, we see one main obstacle, and that's fear. So our effort at some point is going to bring us head-on collision into fear. Has to. Because that is the reason we are unaccepting of life. We're afraid of it. And so inevitably our practice walks us towards fear. Isn't this great? Who wants that? I mean, that's why I was, when I was a monk and I read Who Dies, Stephen Levine's Who Dies, I made my decision right there that I wanted to work with the dying. I didn't want to work with the dying because of altruistic reasons. I wanted to work for the dying because I was scared to death of the subject. And I knew that unless it was addressed head on, that I would just spend my whole life in forms and phases of denial of it. Different expressions of it, of fear. And so, faith, what allows us then to take on fear? What allows effort to be directed towards fear instead of aversive to fear, running from fear? It's faith, that there's something that this subject will bring forth. I don't know what it is, but I have a sense that moving into fear is going to allow a different quality of experience to unfold, a different sense of presence to unfold. So my efforts, along with my faith, have now allowed me to move towards perhaps the most difficult aspects of my life. So now I'm head on into difficulty. In fact, if there's a rule of thumb, it's to move into the difficult in practice. Move into the difficult. Now, at this time, there's also a couple of ways that our mind works against effort that I'd like to explore. One of them has to do with the level of affluence, I think, that we have as a culture. Things have come very easily for us in comparison to other cultures in third world countries. And yes, you can tell me about your circumstances and all of that, but in terms of affluence, in terms of your level of income, your level of affluence, your level of well-being, it's much higher than third world. Now, so we can get an orientation to life that we really don't have to work as hard as we might if we are somewhere else to have it work for us on the level of material goods. That it's actually kind of easy to have a decent standard of living in this culture. And that has a way of influencing how we look at our spiritual attainment, how we look at our spiritual effort as well. We can take it for granted. And you read some of the early Zen books in the Japanese literature where a practitioner will stand out in front of the Zen gates in snow up to his or her waist for days until the Roshi will let them in. You hear these stories, and it may just be too easy here. There might need to be a little more rub. I'll go to the Dharma Temple. No, I don't want to miss. There's a great documentary on PBS. I mean, you know, is the urgency there, you see? I mean, what's our life? Are we just kind of drifting? Because if we're drifting, our effort is drifting with that. And is also drifting, our faith is drifting with that. So I'll just leave you with that, just for something to ponder. You know, it's said that one does not fully abide in faith until one is so thirsty that the only thing they think about is the water of the Dharma. It's like drowning person just trying to get the get up out of the water just to breathe. And it's, I think it's because the inducements of life take us away from that impulse to be free. The impulse to be free is in every one of us. But we get sidetracked, don't we? And so faith remains unverified because of the contamination of our effort, really. And then the second reason that many of us have trouble with effort is that we usually put effort in alignment with our self-beliefs. And because many of us hold very detrimental self-beliefs about ourselves, who we are, we often get or find a practice that can be a kind of form of punishment. This is the downside of living in a Christian Judeo society, I believe. The sense of being a sinner. And that somehow I have to do penance in the form of my spiritual work in order for me to be worthy of this teaching. And so some of us can pick forms and expressions of practice which, or the way we hold our own meditation practice, that is really self-abusive. It's not just a few. It's most of us. And it's often not as obvious as self-flagellation, but when you ask the person how they are with their pain, you can see it. That kind of tension and feelings of got to stay with it, you know, I've got to get into that. When faith is verified and acknowledged, our self-beliefs and the core of our inadequacy is not what is verified. What is verified is kindness. That's what we verify. Self-kindness. So when faith moves from bright faith to verified faith, our efforts move towards relaxation, letting be, and self-kindness. Away from this brutal sense of driving ourselves through some sort of self-punishment. And in some ways, what's verified is that the sacred is within. We begin to feel it. We begin to get a sense of it. We begin to understand that we have never been without it. And that we just have to verify that. We just have to see it fully. And then stop the resistance. Let ourselves go. So this is an extraordinary movement of maturity when the faith becomes verified and the energies are not towards self-beratement or its expressions, achievement, ambition. See, those are all ways of putting ourselves down now and being something later. I'm this way now, and I won't be really worthy until I've achieved, until I've gained, until I've accessed, until I... So all of that sort of falls away when we verify our faith. And the energies move away from trying to gain something, as if it were a product outside of ourselves, to verifying that the sacred is within, and that we can relax into it, that we can release ourselves into it by letting things be. We break down the barrier of resistance. That's where our efforts go. That's where our focus goes. That's where our energies now go, because we have seen through our meditation that the sacred is within, that this is who I am. We are here in our original nature, and we just have lost that understanding. So then when that understanding starts springing forth, it's not a new direction for my ambition, it's a new direction entirely that allows me to relax. That's why our meditation practice over again emphasizes relaxing. Just relax into it. That's to cut the ambition. It's to cut the striving. Because our worldly values contradict that. Our worldly values are, I have to strive and be ambitious and all the things that we've been taught. But when the sacred is reachable, it's always reachable. Every moment. Okay. And we've, from time to time, tried to point that out. It's reachable. And then one realizes that since the sacred is within, and that faith is being verified, and my energies are now going, that every step, every method that I use, every tool, every means, must have in its core self-kindness. Must. Has to. Because if it's not, if it's self-beratement, self-punishment, it's not verified faith. It's not, the understanding is skewed. But self-kindness holds ourself with affection. And so every movement of mind and body in the direction of effort, once it is seen, is with the means and the ends being the same. If I want to live in love, in presence, then the methods I use must not be in contradiction to that sacredness. The methods I use, the means I employ, cannot be in contradiction to the ends I seek. And so I look and say, okay, I can hold this. It's okay. It's okay. I'm feeling this. I'm feeling irritable. It's okay. It's okay. Now, the effort, when we have said it's okay, we are now ready for the next phase of our effort. Now we're looking at abiding effort. Abiding effort. That's faith in the unknown. That's a faith in, that's where we're not fighting or trying to acknowledge anything, because the sacred is, and when we have verified that the sacred is, we can relax into the sacred and abide in the sacred. Then where does our energies and effort go? Our energies and efforts go towards the exploration of the unknown. You might say it's the effort to fulfill wise view. What is wise view? The sense of things being connected. Connection. And when I'm not feeling connected, I don't use my efforts to moralize on how bad I've been. I say, oh, I've made a mistake in view. Let me relax. Get back into this thing. And abide once more in connection. And to do that, our efforts go towards connecting with what seems to be the most troubling parts of ourselves. Our anger, our fear, our annoyance, our impatience. Because connection begins there. It doesn't begin once we get over that. It begins there. It begins with whatever is occurring. Even the most difficult things as they're occurring. Anger. Well, I can't get into my spiritual practice before. No, we just abide in anger. Okay. Knowing faithfully that abiding in anger, surrendering to anger, is surrendering to the sacred. That the love of God and the fear of God are the same thing. That everything holds the essence of the sacred. And so nothing needs to be troubling. And sometimes I lose my footing and anger stays with me for a while until the energy and the effort aligns me with the faith that I know is there. And I, what have I been doing? Just release myself. Just go, okay. It's just anger. It's just this. It's just this. And from abiding faith, we may have a problem. Well, maybe there's a lot of self-judgment. And suddenly, we'll have enormous focus and energy to see self-judgment. It will see it, just like that. Or inadequacy. Oh, just see it. Without any real force or intention, we just hold the problem and the problem all of a sudden starts radiating with insight. We don't know how we got there. We didn't force ourselves to have or see things. It just starts opening like magic. And it may last for a while and then it seems to go down because the energies, the understanding has been satisfied at that point. Until some other problem may arise that is deeply meaning, and we can't impose the problems on us. These problems come up because we're passionately interested in this particular aspect of ourselves. And then insight says, oh, God, I see. Yeah. And that's what it means to be an inviting faith. And some of you are shaking your heads because you know that. You've had that feeling before. You've had that happen. Faith in at this point, faith and energies are much more sublime, much easier, much more tranquil. Not the revving up and the forcing myself back from my thought. Not that hardness and that sense of turmoil and turbulence and just labor intensive. It doesn't have the labor intensity because everything is easier. Everything is just seen and we abide in what is seen. Effort just goes in the abiding. It doesn't go in seeing anything in particular. It doesn't go in conjuring up new states of mind. It goes in the abiding. The abiding. The energy is in the abiding. I love the word abiding. It's my new word. And so we've moved effort in lockstep with our faith. And the nature of effort is on a continuum, just the way faith is on a continuum. And the effort, the labor-intensive effort of the beginning, which we all have, and if you're still in, that's fine, and many of us find ourselves in that again and again. I do. But there's also a sense, a growing sense, perhaps, in some of us, of the faith and the effort being verified now. We've seen. It's less about me, and it's more about the mystery. Until, in fact, it's abiding in the mystery, and our efforts and energy just go towards that, relaxation into. And so this is the step and progression of practice with effort, with faith. Now remember, that's only two of the five faculties. So we have a lot more to cover. But you can see how they walk in tandem to one another. So can we sit for a minute or two?